Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week marks the kickoff of our spring fundraising campaign, and we'd very much appreciate your support. At Pardes, men and women of diverse backgrounds and belief systems encounter the most compelling and challenging texts of the Jewish tradition. We offer our students a unique experience of intellectual openness, rigorous textual analysis, and opportunities for personal spiritual growth. Pardes is a small institution, so your donation of any amount would make a real difference. Please donate online at donate.pardesusa.org. Thank you so much for your support. It makes a real difference. This week, Rabbi Schweiger discusses Parshat Bahar. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member and serves as the Pardes Mashgiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parsha is Parshat Bahar. I would like to examine the opening sections that speak about the sabbatical year and the jubilee year and compare them with ideas that we discussed in last week's parsha. To refresh your memories, last week we examined chapter 23, the section of the festivals. Let us go back, chapter 23, verse 3. 6 days shall work be done, and on the seventh day it is a Shabbat Shabbaton, a holy calling. All work you shall not do. Shabbat to God in all of your dwelling places. Shabbat is the quintessential festive day, the day where all cessation of work is to be. And this is a Shabbat Lashem. By not doing work, we acknowledge that ultimately God is the creator. When we go to the beginning of our parsha, in chapter 25, verse 3, 6 years you shall plant in your field, 6 years you shall prune your vineyards and gather the produce. And in the seventh year, it is a Shabbat Shabbaton to the land, Shabbat to God. Your field you shall not plant, your vineyard you shall not prune. During the sabbatical year, there is a prohibition of working the land. The Torah lists planting, pruning, in a subsequent verse, harvesting. In another verse in Exodus, plowing, all of the different activities which we do in order to make the land produce and to reap the benefits of that production, we are not allowed to do in the sabbatical year. The reason being, Shabbat Lashem, it is a Sabbath to God. What is added in the sabbatical year? If every Shabbat we recognize that God is the creator, on the sabbatical year we recognized God is the owner of the land, and therefore we stop working, so that in no way should we think we are the owners. This point is actually highlighted in a verse that appears later on, which speaks about the sabbatical, which speaks about the jubilee year. In chapter 25, verse 23, and the land shall not be sold forever, because the land is mine. You are strangers and residents with me. The Torah highlights this concept of the land being God's, which has many ramifications. But I would just like to focus on one particular point. In chapter 25, verse 20, the Torah anticipates questions which people will have regarding observance of the sabbatical year. When you will say, what shall we eat in the seventh year? Behold, we have not planted, and we have not gathered our produce. In verse 21, and I will command my blessing to you in the sixth year, and it will produce enough for 3 years. This verse is telling us the land is God's. Whatever grows in the land is a blessing which is given to us by God. In the seventh year, when we don't plant, when we don't really harvest, if we're going to be able to live, to be sustained, it will be as a result of the blessing which God gives us in the sixth year. Note the parallel to the manna in the desert. The Jewish people are not allowed to go and gather the manna on the seventh day. But then how will they eat? They're told that on the sixth day, they will get a double portion, which will last them for the seventh day as well. Both the sabbatical year and the story of the manna, chapter 16 in Shemot, are coming to teach the Jewish people a very important principle. Although we work the land 6 years and put in tremendous efforts, it is important to realize that whatever grows is not because we did it. We made it. In fact, the Torah is very concerned with that type of attitude. And in Deuteronomy chapter 8, the Torah actually says, "Beware, lest you eat and are full, and you build beautiful homes, and you settle down." This is chapter 8, verse 12. And in verse 14, "And you become arrogant. You forget the Lord your God, who took you out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage." And in verse 17, "And you say in your heart, it is the strength and power of my hand that made for me all of this wealth." Just as every 7 days we stop working, we have this humbling experience that makes us realize that ultimately we are not the creator. On another level, in the sabbatical year, we stop working the land to realize that ultimately we are not the producers. We are not in control of the land. The land is God's. Whatever is produced is a result of the blessing of God. And as a result, we should be extremely appreciative and thankful for whatever we have. This is the meaning of Shabbat Lashem. Another dimension of Shabbat Lashem. In the same way that on Shabbat, we cease working, and as a result of that, are liberated, are freed, so that we can now devote all of our energies to spirituality, to prayer, to study, and in that way, make it a Shabbat Lashem. So too on the sabbatical year, by not working the land, this frees up our time and enables us to devote our energies to study and perhaps to good deeds, gemilut chesed, acts of kindness. And in that way, it is too a Shabbat Lashem. But then there is another element, which is a derivative. On Shabbat, it is called a Mikra'i Kodesh, a holy calling. We are supposed to acknowledge the sanctity of this time. Shabbat is a recognition of the sanctity of time, and not just of the seventh day or of the festivals, but through the recognition of the sanctity of the seventh day, we recognize the sanctity of all time. And what does that mean? All time is precious. All time should not be wasted. All time should be used in bringing us into a relationship with God. God gave us life. Life, the time that we have on this earth. And that is a precious commodity that we should not waste. In a similar way, we are told in the sabbatical year, Shabbat Shabbaton Yeh La'aretz, chapter 25, verse 4, and later in verse 5, Shnat Shabbaton Yeh La'aretz. It is a Sabbath to the land. And what does that mean? By not working, we acknowledge the holiness of the land. When I spoke of time, I said the preciousness of time. The land is precious. How do we acknowledge that quality? The rabbis tell us in an explanation of verse 6, "And the Sabbath of the land shall be to you to eat." And the rabbis say, whatever grows in the sabbatical year is to be consumed and not to be wasted. Whatever grows in the sabbatical year is to be consumed and not used for other purposes. Whatever grows in the sabbatical year should be eaten and not used as a commercial product, as an instrument of business. Whatever grows in the sabbatical year should be eaten only in the land of Israel and not exported outside of its borders. How do we appreciate the holiness of the land? By valuing the produce of the land. Valuing the produce means that I try to use it to its maximum. Things which are to be consumed should be eaten, not wasted, not thrown away. This is the basis of Jewish ecology. Unfortunately, living in an affluent society, there is tremendous waste of things which grow on the land. And here the Torah is telling us, value it, not only in the sabbatical year, but the sabbatical year becomes a catalyst for us to value that which grows in the land all the time. In the same way, we make blessings over our food, and by doing that, acknowledge that our food is a gift of God. By doing it, we acknowledge this is holy, and as something holy, we should elevate it. And the elevation of that produce is to use it to its fullest. Where it is edible, eat it. So too on the sabbatical year. By eating it in the land, we are elevating the produce towards a quasi-sacrificial status. As I mentioned, the second element is a derivative of the fact that it is a Shabbat Lashem, a recognition of God, who is the owner of the land, of God, who blesses the land. And because God gave me whatever I have as a blessing, it is precious, and therefore I should be very sensitive as to how I use it. I should see it as being an end rather than a means of accumulating wealth, and that is why business of produce that grows is prohibited. And now let us come to the last element. In chapter 25, verse 6, this eating shall be to you and your servant and your maid and your hired hand and your resident and the stranger among you, to the animals and the beasts that are in your land. If I fully understand what it means to be given a blessing, to have holy produce, then I need to also understand the social responsibility. But even more than that, on the sabbatical year, one is not allowed to fence his property. One needs to open up the gates and allow equal access to everyone as a way of acknowledging, this is not mine. This is a gift. It is not just that this is mine, but I feel a responsibility and hence I am being a good guy and giving it to those around me. It goes far beyond that. This isn't mine. It is a blessing. As a blessing, it's something which I have no greater claim to. If I now share it with those around me, it's not that I'm being this wonderful person, but they have equal claim to it. So that the effect of the sabbatical year is to not only create a relationship between me and God, between me and the land, but between me and my society, between me and the animals. There is a rabbinic interpretation which says, as long as the food is in the fields for the animals, you can eat in your home. When the food is no longer in the fields, you cannot hoard it in your house and continue to eat. What an unbelievable concept. It is not only a question of community building, but of really putting me and the natural world into a relationship. An equal relationship vis-a-vis God. Note the parallel to Shabbat, which is not last week's parsha, but in the Ten Commandments, in Parshat Ki Tisa, where it speaks of not only should you not do work, but also your animals should not do work. Your animals should also rest. Once again, we are taking the concept of Shabbat, but expanding it. Whereas Shabbat is addressing the individual, perhaps the community. The sabbatical year is expanding that concept to the Jewish nation, to the Jewish people. Let me now look at a second parallel. In last week's parsha, we spoke of the counting of the Omer. We count 50 days, really 49, from the second day of Pesach to Shavuot. And ostensibly, we are marking the period from the initial barley harvest to the wheat harvest, different stages of the agricultural cycle. We know that this counting is also linking the holiday of Pesach with the holiday of Shavuot, the day that marks our physical freedom to the day that crystallizes our spiritual freedom. And in fact, one could see this counting as a progression, as a movement, a development in our spiritual being. We go up the ladder of personal freedom. And I spoke about this in other podcasts, of how the Jewish people progressively develop, because freedom is not just physical freedom, but spiritual freedom. When we look at the sabbatical year, as it is then extended to the Jubilee year, and there is the counting of seven sabbatical years, in chapter 25, verse 5, the seven sabbatical years which culminate in the Jubilee year. Once again, there is a progression, but a progression on the level of peoplehood. And if we take the parallel, when the Jews are given the Torah at Sinai, they have now reached a spiritual peak in that they have now been given their mandate, their constitution. But the constitution is a theoretical document. Our parsha is discussing the implementation. How do you take what you were given? How do you take what you accepted upon yourself and now apply it in reality? And therefore the counting of the 49 years, which culminates in the 50th year, is this movement towards a model society. The 50th year, the Jubilee year, is a sabbatical year, and as such, has all the ideas that we have spoken about. But there are two elements which are unique to the Jubilee year. And this is in chapter 25, verse 10. And you shall sanctify the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all of its inhabitants. It is a Jubilee year that shall be to you, and you shall return a man to his landholding, a man to his family. You shall return. The key word in this sentence, return. The Jubilee year is a corrective. If during the 49 years there have been aberrations, the Jubilee year tries to set things back in order. What are the two laws that are unique to the Jubilee year? First, any land which is sold during the Jubilee year reverts back to its original owner. Second, any person, and here I'll say man to be more precise, who is sold as a Hebrew slave is released in the Jubilee year. This law applies also to female slaves, but I will not go into that right now. In any case, the key element of the Jubilee year is this concept of proclaiming liberty, releasing. But note the way the Torah expresses it. It is not just going free, it is going back. It is not the land which is going back to the person who sold it, but it is the person who sold it who goes back to the land. What land is he going back to? To his achuzah. This is the land which he inherited from his ancestors, going all the way back to the original conquest of the land in the time of Joshua. This is the land that he should have been handing down to future generations, and he sold. The Torah now is creating a corrective. You sold your land, as we find later in our parsha. If we look at chapter 25, verse 25, if a man is poor and sells from his landholding, why would one sell his land? He is poor. He needs money now, otherwise he will fail in his ability to sustain himself, to be what we call economically viable. Although the Torah did not anticipate the following scenario, another possibility could be that one sells his land in order to make a quote-unquote killing, to make a lot of money. The Torah did not relate to that type of example, even though it's certainly possible, because there was a certain understanding that people hold the land being precious. It is their achuzah. It was given to them. It's their heirloom. What does it mean to go back to your achuzah? It means for the person to somehow remove himself from the present and place himself in the continuum of time with a past and a future. The Jubilee year, as the corrective, is trying to give people a sense of peoplehood, which goes beyond the sabbatical year. In the sabbatical year, we also have a corrective, but it is a corrective that tries to create that sense of equality of all those who exist right now, to give a sense of peoplehood, of the here and now. The Jubilee year is the corrective which gives us that historical context that is not only to bring us into relationship with those around us now, but with the past and the future. It is a way of making us understand the giving of the land was not to you. It was to your ancestors who gave it to you, and you have a responsibility to give it to future generations. When someone is sold into slavery, the classic example is he sells himself into slavery because he's poor. And once again, that is what is discussed later in our parsha. What happens if someone is so poor that he eventually sells himself? So the Torah says in chapter 25, verse 40, until the Jubilee year he shall work with you, and then he shall go out, he and his children, and return to his family, return to his achuzah. Once again, someone becomes a slave because of specific needs of the moment. But in doing so, they have removed themselves from where they need to be. There is a land, a piece of land. There is a family that they should be part of. This is what the Jubilee year does. It gives us a sense of our relationship to the land, not only in the here and now, but historically, to make us realize this is the gift of generations that should be handed down to future generations. This year, we are observing the sabbatical year. According to most rabbinic understandings, the observance of the sabbatical year nowadays is only rabbinic. Because according to Torah law, the sabbatical year, the observance of the sabbatical year, is a function of the observance of the Jubilee year. We do not observe the Jubilee year now. The reason being, because for the Jubilee year to be observed, we need the bulk of the Jewish population being in the land of Israel. Hence, there is a rabbinic comment that says, when the tribes of Reuven and Gad were exiled, the exile of the 10 tribes, almost 2,500 years ago, over 2,500 years ago, the Jewish people stopped observing the Jubilee year. The Jubilee year requires that we have the bulk of the population in the land of Israel. And if we think about it, this is a very, very powerful statement, which says that for us to really have a sense of peoplehood, the bulk of the population needs to be in the land of Israel. That is a prerequisite. And then we can talk about contextualizing it historically. As I mentioned, this year is a sabbatical year. Very often we become caught up with the details of the sabbatical year and lose sight of the larger concept. So to summarize what we have spoken about, the sabbatical year is there to give us an understanding that God is the owner of the land. Whatever we have is a gift from God. As such, we should value it. We should be grateful. We should express that gratitude by seeing the holiness of the land, by not wasting things, by not converting the land into a commercial entity. We should translate that recognition of the blessing of God by trying to create social equality, by bridging the gap between the haves and have-nots. We should see that the resting of the land should be an impetus for us to cultivate our spirituality. Israel is celebrating its 60th birthday. There are many, many problems that we face, some which are external to us, but some which are very much in our control. Our mandate is to see the land, and by extension the state, as being a gift which we have, as a blessing that we should see as being very, very precious, and as such, that we need to cultivate, in the metaphoric sense, to create a model society. This is our goal, to draw strength from our past and use it as a vision for our future. The Talmud says, maybe I should correct that, we have a rabbinic statement which says, Rashi quotes it, that the 70 years of the Babylonian exile in the first temple period corresponded to the 70 sabbatical years which the Jewish people did not observe. And this, in fact, is based on verses that appear in next week's parsha. We need to learn from our history. The gift of the land is a precious gift. It is there for us to create something very, very special in this land. Let us not take this gift for granted. Let us not lose it. The ball is in our hands. It is up to us to do something with it. And I would like to say, not only is this relevant to Jews living in the land of Israel, but to Jews living all over the world. For the Jews living in the land of Israel, we have to, day in, day out, ask ourselves, what type of society are we creating? For the Jews living outside the land of Israel, you need to ask yourself the question, what am I doing, watching as an outside observer what is happening, when I could be an active participant? Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Please remember to consider a donation to Pardes in honor of the podcast. You can donate online at donate.pardesusa.org. Thanks so much for tuning in, and please check back next week for another episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.